Welcome to the Total Wealth Academy radio show, where wealth includes much more than just money. It includes family, fitness, romance, and all the other parts of a balanced life. Listen and learn how 70% of the millionaires in America made their money using real estate. Now your host, real estate investor and consultant, Steve Davis.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Trevor Davis, wealth coach up here at Total Wealth Academy. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and I want to thank everybody again for all the support that's been coming in over the last 2 weeks. I really appreciate it. I want to start again, this time with the quote from Einstein, which is, "The measure of intelligence is the ability to change." True intelligence is the ability to change, to identify the things that are not working and pursue the things that do work. As painful as it can be, as much discipline as it requires, you have to make changes when you're not getting the results for yourself that you want in this limited amount of time that we're here in our lives. You have to be able to commit to those changes. Now, 2 weeks ago, I went over in detail The Richest Man in Babylon, and I got a lot of response with the book request. If you want to get the book, the free PDF of this book, please send me an email, trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. and put in the subject line radio, and I'll send you a free book of The Richest Man in Babylon. One of the principles that is taught in The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clason is you have to save at least 10% of your income. You want to save as much as you can, but the goal is to make sure you're saving at minimum 10%. You have to do this because if you're not going to, you're not going to have income. You're not going to have a pile of money for you to invest in real estate, for example, or whatever it is you decide to do. It could be a business that you love, but you're probably not going to win the lottery, the Mega Millions lottery. It's literally more likely for you to get struck by lightning 7 times than to win the Mega Millions lottery. It's astronomically unlikely. And of course, we hear about it a lot because you hear it in the news, you hear it online, you'll see it everywhere. You'll see it on Facebook where you hear about the person that won, but that is an astronomically small possibility. So it's not going to work out for most of us. For the rest of us, myself and our members here at Total Wealth Academy, we always put in the strategy of saving correctly and wisely so we can get to our next investment or get to our very, very first investment. We're not going to have the money to do so unless we're saving correctly. So when we take a look at what some people are doing, I emphasized this a week ago at this point, but 48% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck that are making over $100,000 a year. Across the board, 64% of people who make less than $100,000 are still living paycheck to paycheck. And the question I asked myself, based on some of the response I got, was, what does that actually look like? What does somebody who makes over $100,000 a year, a family that makes over $100,000 a year, what does that look like financially for them to not be able to save enough to invest, to get to a better position? And it was just during casual browsing of Reddit that I found that there was a list of all the expenses of a family in New York City. And they are living paycheck to paycheck on a gross salary of $500,000, $500,000. And they're living paycheck to paycheck. So I broke it down, I put all the numbers from that into a spreadsheet, and then I basically took two other options for them to change it up and figure out what they could do differently. But I'm jumping ahead a little bit. Here's basically what it breaks down to. They have a 401k commitment, they have their taxes in New York City, which according to this article say it's a full 40%, because in New York City, as a New York state, you have your federal income tax, you have your state income tax, and in NYC, you have your city income tax. Combine that all together, their salary after the 401k is $464,000. Their tax $185,600, and their net salary is $278,400. Their kids are young. This is a family that's apparently in their mid-30s. They have to do daycare for their children, which is $42,000 a year. $23,000 accounted for food. But the kicker here is that they live in a house or a brownstone, and it's worth $1.5 million. So $1.5 million home. So their home mortgage cost is $60,000 a year. Home maintenance accounted for $5,000. Property taxes $20,000. Property insurance $2,500. And I'm just going to steamroll through the rest. But vacations $18,000. Car payments $9,600. Gas $5,000. Car insurance $2,000. Life insurance $2,500. Clothes $9,500, kids lessons $12,000, charity $18,000, student loan debt $32,000, and miscellaneous $10,000 for total costs of $271,100, leaving them with a grand total of $7,300 as they reported last year. So this is a family living in New York City that is making exactly $500,000 a year, that is living paycheck to paycheck and only saving a little over $7,000 a year. Where are they going to get the money in this situation to invest in real estate? Where are they going to get the money to invest in themselves to start a business? It's not currently happening for them because they have extremely high expenses. And a couple of things in this situation I wanted to change just to see what income they would have after it was all said and done in two different scenarios. The first scenario is keeping them in New York City and putting them instead in a $500,000 house, which is, you know, it still sounds pretty expensive to us here in Houston and around Texas, but $500,000 is pretty standard from what I was seeing in New York City. So they're going to have to downsize pretty significantly and not contribute to a 401k. What happens is the mortgage goes down to $24,000 a year. So home maintenance and property taxes go down. I cut their vacations a year from three times a year to one, so $6,000. And I cut their clothing expenditure from $9,500 a year. That one I have the hardest time wrapping my head around because that is a ton of money just to spend on clothes, but I cut it down to $3,000 a year. After this was all said and done, now what's left is over $100,000. They're now saving that year $100,000, $377, so a little over $100,000 a year just by moving, mainly by moving into a more affordable home, which is by far their greatest expense. Same story here in Texas. People buy the fancy house to look good. They choose that ego emotion, and they're trying to look good to other people instead of making a smart financial decision. Once we get back, I'm going to expand on this with the third option in this situation, and we'll see what happens then. Stay tuned.
Told that it's normal to lose money in a down market? That's just not true. Hi, I'm Steve Davis, CEO of Total Wealth Academy. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets while creating a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. If you have $100,000 or more to invest, you should consider this to protect and grow your money. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com and click the free sample class button. Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Trevor Davis with the Total Wealth Academy radio show. We were just discussing the family in New York City that is grossing in salary $500,000 a year, only saving $7,000 a year. And then I changed it up by just putting them into a $500,000 apartment instead of the $1.5 million home, brownstone apartment, whatever, that they were living in. And that almost single-handedly allowed them to save over $100,000 a year instead of just a little over $7,000. the third option here is, and this is kind of controversial, but what if they moved to Texas, and what advantages are they going to get here in Texas over being in New York City? I like to say controversial here because there's a lot of people moving to Texas, to all of our major metroplexes all over the place from all parts of the country. And one of the biggest reasons for it is because they are able to get high pay with very, very low housing costs, especially for what you can get for your money. So in this situation, if this family moves out to Texas, I took out the 401k, their taxes go down from $185,600 to $115,304, because here in Texas, we don't have a state income tax, and you don't have to pay that. You know, our property taxes are a little bit higher, and that kind of takes away a little bit of that, but we'll see that that's not really the biggest difference either. But their tax bill got significantly cut. I put them into a $500,000 house here in Texas. And what do we know what $500,000 houses here in Texas? Well, you go out to Richmond, go to the Woodlands, and you get a beautiful piece of land, a house that's 4,000 or more square feet in a beautiful neighborhood, very, very new in most situations, absolutely gorgeous, and a ton more space than what they no doubt had in New York City. So their mortgage is the same right here at the $500,000. It's about $24,000 a year. And once this is all said and done, by doing this move, they're able to save $176,740 per year. That is way, way better than saving just $7,000 a year by far. I mean, if you're looking at about $25,000 down total with the single family rentals right now, you know, that's going to be able to get them seven year one. And one of the big things that I want to investigate here while we're at it is the student loan debt that was put into their accounting here, which was being paid off at $32,000 a year. So I took a look at some of this student loan information, and this is definitely one of the most harmful things going on right now in this country. It's when people are pushed to get higher education, even when it's clearly not the best thing for them, and they end up graduating with tens of thousands of dollars of debt, literally starting off their adult careers with tens of thousands of dollars in financial liability. Ideally, to pay that off within a couple of years, but that's not what ends up happening for most people. And I just find that to be one of the most dangerous and destructive things that we're pushing our kids towards. It doesn't really make sense for you to push your kid to a strategy that sets them up for failure because they're literally having to graduate with a huge amount of debt. That's just not the best thing for most people. If you have a clear strategy to pay it off down a clear career path that you're passionate about, you know, that debt ends up being a small cost to pay. But the average law school graduate, according to the American Bar Association, has right around $165,000 in educational debt upon graduation. So if these folks are in their mid-30s, according to this, they're both lawyers. Both the husband and wife are lawyers, and they're both making right around $250,000 each a year. And if they're in their mid-30s, I'm hoping that they're getting pretty close to paying off that debt at this point. But once it's paid off, we can effectively hack off that $32,000 in loan payment and further increase the amount that they can save. The challenge here, as I emphasized last week, was the lifestyle creep risk. If they're going to end up saving over $170,000 a year by moving to Texas and living in a $500,000 house, a lot of people doing this are going to get the idea, well, I've got all this money saved up. Can I just go for that $1.5 million house again? I mean, I'm in Texas now. The $1.5 million house is a much better deal. Yes, but the expenses are still going to be just as high. it's still going to require that mortgage that's going to need that payment of around $60,000 a year, and you're still not securing the properties that will actually pay for these bills without you having to work 50, 60 hours a week as a lawyer. The other thing, too, is that when we talk about the time frame for it, according to the American Bar Association, the average lawyer working in the public sector will take 26 years to pay off their law school debt when they're using 20% of their income. Average student borrowers are looking at 20 years to pay off their student loans, with some taking 45 years or longer to become debt-free. And this information was published back in October 2021. I just don't think that it's right for people to be pushed to this strategy, this map that definitely doesn't work, that definitely starts people off in a terrible position where, look, you got educated, you did everything right, you got all of this world-class influence from some of the most intelligent minds in the world, from these college professors and these educational programs. But for all of that, you have to pay this off. You have to pay this off for years and years and years. It's just the stress that I see people in that have to pay off student debt is absolutely insane. Most of the people I know have student debt, and it's just not something enjoyable to see. And beyond that, it's just having to pay this off, having that crutch, makes it harder to break out of corporate America, makes it more difficult to get out from under the influence of corporate America, of the multi-billionaires, of the multi-millionaires that own these businesses, where it's great that they work there, but you want to become a millionaire too. And one of the hardest things to do to yourself is to put yourself in this debt to where it's going to be difficult for you to get out of it, one, and two, to get into these investments. The good news, though, is that student loan debt, it's very forgiven. It's not really something that harms your credit that much. And it's very, very easy to get qualified for conventional loans with student debt. That's a fact. But it's just, I have a very, very serious problem with the fact that everybody just across the board is told, go to school, go to college, get a job that's really good just so you can pay off this debt. When some of us are definitely more inclined for certain paths that don't necessarily need to incur $165,000 in debt. A funny quote, which is from a meme, and it's a meme that's about the Sigma grind. And Sigma grind basically means the ultra alpha working person that's basically quoting all of these motivational speakers all the time, and all they ever do is just work, 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 and they're going to say something like, specifically for this situation, for this family, you don't have an expense problem, you have an income problem. You know, that's not really a complete assessment of the situation here, because they don't have an income problem. I don't think anybody can argue that a family making $500,000 has an income problem. That's a lot of money. They have an expense problem, and that's their problem. When they moved into the $1.5 million house, when they still had tons of student loan debt, they're spending a ton on clothes, they're vacationing a lot. It's just not the best strategy. Just because you can afford something does not mean that you should buy it. If you can barely afford something, if you can barely qualify for that house, What does that mean? That you qualified for the house, but just barely. You don't want to go into the house you barely qualify for. You want to move into the house that you overwhelmingly qualify for, so your expenses are low, so you can get into the position to where you can have income that meets and exceeds your wants and needs, and then, at that point, by all means, move into the $1.5 million house. But don't use it as something that delays your progress to an actual sustainable living and lifestyle with the $1.5 million home. Because that's not the problem here. if your goal is to live in $1.5 million home, like mine is, for example, and I really don't know if I'm actually going to go that high myself because it drives me bonkers to think about those house payments, but I'm looking more at like maybe $500,000 to $1 million as my target goal, and I can get exactly what I want here in Houston with that. But I'm saving money by living in a more reasonable situation now so I can get all of the income that I need to pay for all of those expenses and more first, not after. So be very, very cautious with this really misguided quote that just says, hey, it's all your fault. You are just not working hard enough. You need to grind, grind, grind. When really you do have to look at the expense side as well. So be very strategic with what you're spending your money on. So when we come back, we will expand on the survival brain and what it truly means to thrive.
Financial planner, ask them these two questions. One, will I lose money in a down market? Two, do I still pay you if I lose money? If the answer to either question is yes, fire them and come see us. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets and create a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and click the free sample class button. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com. Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Trevor Davis at Total Wealth Academy. We just hit basically everything I wanted to talk about with the budgeting situation of the family in New York City, and I'm very interested to hear your thoughts. So if you want to talk, give us a call, 281-558-5738, KSEV. That's 281-558-5738. I would love to hear your thoughts about the family in New York City that makes $500,000 a year and can't save really anything. When we're getting into the survival brain, I've really touched on this, but I really feel the need to keep pushing this because this is just fundamental to what's going on in our head in terms of what is this conflict that exists in our brain basically at all times. And hopefully you can minimize the conflict itself with meditation and education and reading. But there's always this dynamic between the brain that wants to survive and the brain that wants to thrive. Why is it that somebody decides to listen to my radio show today? I mean, why does somebody listen to Steve every day of the week if they're not looking for something more, something better than what they have now, possibly from being on a map that doesn't work? There's this part of us that's always been there, that's always been a part, that wants more for us in a constructive, positive way. Not to simply say, I want more, 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 and just consume, 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 but something meaningful, something fulfilling, something that makes us feel truly satisfied with what we're doing with our time on this earth. And the book I recommend everybody read is right now, because I just finished it, is The Untethered Soul by Michael A. Singer. And in this book, I'm going to tell you, if you want to have truly permanent, sustainable peace of mind, this is the book that you need to read yesterday. I mean, I feel like I wish I read this book 10 years ago, right before I graduated college, because this book has changed my life, has significantly reduced my stress levels, and has given me tools to effectively manage the conflict between the survival brain and the thriving brain. One of my favorite points here from Mr. Singer was his version of the survival brain is that it's not really evolved much from the caveman days, because in a dangerous world like the caveman days, our brain is hardwired to point out all of the stuff that's dangerous all the time, and it sort of has this stomach for danger in the sense that it wants to see a certain amount of danger, because once it sees that amount of danger, it feels satisfied that it did its job, it feels satisfied that it's it feels confident that it's identified enough danger that it's gotten everything that could be a threat to you. The big problem here is that when our survival needs are met, like almost all of us here in this country, and of course there are big exceptions to this, and I do not want to negate that experience or ignore that experience. For most of us, our survival needs are met on a daily basis. We have food, we have water, we have shelter, we have people that care for us. But our survival brain doesn't really register that the way it should be accounted for. You know, our brain doesn't look at that and say, hey, I can effectively give a value to all of this good stuff in my life, so it effectively negates all of this bad stuff overwhelmingly, and therefore my life is great. My life is phenomenal. And I really think and I really hope that most people, if they really look deep down and take a look at the good things that are going on for their lives, their wonderful families, their good, great careers, the fun that they get to do with their free time, the moments that they get to share with their loved ones, even just the nice things that a coworker can do for you sometimes. I mean, I think most of us can identify that overall, way more positive things happen to us than negative things. But the problem here is that that brain is still telling us that there has to be danger. There has to be a threat. There has to be something there that you're just not seeing. And because it believes that, it puts us into permanent stress mode. It puts us in this permanent, insufferable state where we feel like anything could go wrong at any time, and we're just fearful in general. And that's what I was talking about stress yesterday and with my coworker, and I really feel like stress is just unidentified fear. It's an amalgamation of all of the fears that we have that we haven't really specifically pointed out that have just built up inside us. We haven't dealt with it, so it just becomes this general reaction, this negative sense, the tightening of the neck and the muscles in the back of your neck, the tension you feel in your chest. That's a huge one, and that's one of the ones you cannot ignore. Just random pains throughout the body. It manifests itself in different ways, but stress is there for most of us, and most of us aren't really managing it well. What we have to do is identify some of the more objective things that we're concerned about and make sure that we're acknowledging that overall things are actually going well. I know the point of this radio show is for us to get a good change, to make progress, but we also have to give ourselves credit where credit is due. Because from that Sigma quote, that Sigma grind mindset quote, where it says it's not an expense problem, it's an income problem, and in other words, the problem is with you, you're just not making enough money, you're not grinding hard enough. Like, you need to work 170 hours a week, is another one I saw in a meme. And obviously the joke there is that that's impossible. But we have to acknowledge that we're doing something correctly. We don't need to beat ourselves up. We don't need to keep blaming ourselves and building this storm of negativity in our heads that feeds the survival brain's panic mode that allows it to keep controlling our decisions. This all leads to a big point, which is leadership is by example. It's your duty not to just survive, but to thrive. Because our survival needs are met, this is your opportunity, not just opportunity, but duty to thrive. Whatever thriving means to you, because to be able to survive on a daily basis, to have all your needs met on a daily basis and not take advantage of that, it's throwing away your opportunity to thrive. When there are so many other people out there around the world and even in this country that are not really given the guarantee of survival, the near guarantee of survival, I should say. Take advantage of the luxuries that you have. Take advantage of the fact that you have one of the best opportunities. And here, I'm just going to say it, but in this country, you have the best opportunity to be successful out of any place in the world. You have more opportunities to start businesses, to start investing than any other place in the world. So I don't really accept it when somebody wants to constantly make excuses and find every single reason why they cannot be successful. That doesn't make any sense. This is a quote from Gary John Bishop in his from his book, Un-F Yourself. I'm not going to say that word over the air. But he says, when excuses replace victories, get yourself a coach. It does not have to be us. It can be any group of people that you feel comfortable with and vibe with. But you need somebody on your team that can push you towards the thriving mode and away from the survival mode. The big thing that Steve likes to emphasize is that if you're going to stick with survival mode and you're going to do what most people do, even in this country, they're going to work 40 hours a week or more. They're going to come home and they're going to maybe cook dinner and turn on the TV and watch TV all night until they have to go to bed. And they're going to turn around. They're going to see their kids looking at them, learning from them, and they're going to say, son, daughter, here's how you be successful. You go to college, get a bunch of debt. Of course, they don't say that part, but that's the reality for most people. Go to college, get a high-paying job so you can be successful. Rebellion phase activates in a lot of teenagers at this point because they ask, well, what do you mean? Like, how does that work? And very few teenagers, even then in their rebellious phase, will directly confront their parents and say, hey, look, like, you don't have the life that I want, or it doesn't seem like you have the life that even you want, so why should I listen to this information? That was something very different with Robert Kiyosaki's experience in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where his dad had the humility to say, look, son, I don't know this. So I'm going to refer you to your friend's dad who does know how to build wealth because he's a businessman and I'm just an employee. But if leadership is by example, you have to get out of survival mode and get into thriving mode if you truly want your kids to thrive. Everybody wants their kids to thrive and not just survive. But you have to set the standard first by thriving and showing them how to thrive too first.
This is Steve Davis of the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Most people think they need hundreds of thousands of dollars to successfully invest in real estate. That's simply not true. If you have $100,000 or more, you can begin passive investing today. No worrying with contractors or tenants, and you get all the benefits of real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com, and click the free sample class button. Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Trevor Davis with the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Happy Wednesday, and this is the final segment. So if you have any questions, please do not be shy. Give us a call at 281-558-5738. Just pick up your phone and dial 281-558-5738, and you and I can talk. Final segment, I am going to be going over something that we have really been discussing a lot around the office these days, really for about a year now, but it's based on a TED Talk by a man named Tim Urban, and I love TED Talks. I hope y'all enjoy those as well. There's tons of different topics you can learn about via TED Talks, but his huge problem, his huge paradigm shift was when he was in college. And all he was doing all the time, despite taking advanced classes, was slack off. He kept doing the same thing over and over again, where no matter how big the project he had was, he would slack off, you know, hang out in the coffee shop, hang out with friends, party. And then he'd end up doing all of his work a day or two before it was finished. And one of the last projects he did, he basically said that he was finishing it up the moment he had to turn it in. His whole point here is that procrastination is the thief of your life, leads to massive regret. There's a tool to stop procrastinating, and it's an approach to a part of the survival brain. He says, Tim Urban says, that there are three creatures in your head: the rational thinker, the instantaneous gratification monkey, and the panic monster. Guess which one of these monsters, these creatures in your head, is your best friend when you're trying to get out of a procrastination situation? Is it the rational thinker, thinking logically? Is it the instantaneous gratification monkey, getting us to do fun stuff? Or is it the panic monster, who all of a sudden wakes up at the last possible moment, says, you need to finish this project or else you're going to fail this class or you're going to get fired, and then all of a sudden you have all this productivity that you should have had over the time period for which the project was assigned? Answer is number three, of course. The panic monster is your best friend to get out of procrastination. So which of those two options means your worst enemy? Is it the rational thinker, or is it the instantaneous gratification monkey? And the answer, of course, is, based on that name, the instantaneous gratification monkey. Not the rational thinker, because the rational truly means rational. This is a part of you that truly thinks logically, thinks soundly, and makes the plans that get you the results that you want. The instantaneous gratification monkey is your worst enemy because this is a creature in your head that hijacks your brain's dopamine production, hijacks your brain's pleasure centers, and makes you focus on doing whatever it is you do that is easy, that is fun, that is distracting, that allows you to waste and kill hour after hour after hour. And then all of a sudden, it's like 10, 11 o'clock at night, and it's time to go to bed and your day is over. So we've all procrastinated. I love to ask if people have procrastinated during my free sample class, because there's almost always somebody who shakes their head like mad at that question, like they've never procrastinated on anything ever before, small or big. Not accurate. So we had a deadline in many cases. We had something that had a clear-cut goal, like at work or in school, that said this project to be done by, let's pretend it's a week-long project. Today is March 23rd. You need to get this project done by next Wednesday, March 30th. Instead of doing a little bit every single day, you don't do any tomorrow or Friday or Saturday, Sunday, Monday. You do all of it on Tuesday and then turn it in on Wednesday morning when it's due. You know, that's a whole lot of stress buildup. There's that fear, which you could kind of identify, but it's more of an unidentified fear because you're still distracting yourself. But there's that part of you that's saying, well, there's something you need to do, isn't there? Isn't there something you should be doing better with your time right now? Question we ask people is, why are you not in the financial position that you want to be in already? And could it be, in no small part, because of the instantaneous gratification monkey, who is repeatedly distracting us? Let's say a distraction is something like watching sports all day. You know, you get home, you turn on Fox Sports, you watch baseball all day for the rest of your evening. You watch football or basketball, you know, right now basketball. And you do this day in, day out, week in, week out, month after month, year over year, instead of taking actions that produce the value you want for your life. The activities could be something even more easily consumed, like being on TikTok all day. TikTok is huge. People spend hours and hours on TikTok. People spend hours and hours on Instagram and Facebook and on the internet in general, and not necessarily learning new things, but just looking at funny videos of cats, dogs, people dancing, And TikTok to me, because it's such a low attention span requirement, it does not allow you to cultivate the focus you need to take long-term, dedicated, disciplined actions, like making a phone call to a realtor on a consistent basis to add a realtor onto your team to find a property, or reaching out to a wholesaler, or reaching out to the lender to get approved for a hard money loan. You know, these activities don't produce dopamine for at least the vast majority of people, because it's not something we've associated with fun yet. We can try and associate it with fun and start getting the monkey on our team as well. But for most of us, doing the discipline stuff is always going to suck a little bit because it's not what we've associated with the instantaneous gratification monkey. And there's just something about what the instantaneous gratification monkey attaches himself to that doesn't ever really produce long-term happy results. One of the other brain chemicals that produces happiness is oxytocin. And this is one of the chemicals that gets produced whenever you hug a loved one or you're in the company of a loved one, romantic or a family member. Oxytocin is produced from human connection, and you produce that through friends as well. And that's something that's developed long term. That's not just something that just explodes like dopamine and rushes your system with a short-term pleasure chemical that does not last very long. That's what the instantaneous gratification monkey prefers, because it's easy, it's fun, we know we're not going to get hurt, we know it's not a challenge, we don't have to use our brain too much, but we keep doing it over and over again for whatever activity it is that we do. You have to make sure, a lot of people learned this last night, we had a great turnout at our goal setting class, but this comes down to setting a specific goal for your finances. If we look at a family from New York City that made $500,000, as I introduced today, what should their goal be a year? You know, save at least 10% of what you're making. So their net salary was $278,000 in the situation they were in. So their goal should be to save at least $27,000, but they were only saving a little over $7,000. If they decided to move into that smaller house that was worth $500,000, they'd be able to save over $100,000 a year, which is what lets them pursue their next goal, which it should have been written down at the same time as the savings goal of, let's get a rental. You know, let's just get one single rental and use that to bolster our income. You're going to get the cash flow from it, as well as the equity capture from it, principal pay down, and when you sell it, you're going to make a bunch of money on it as well. But that's going to move you towards the goal of financial independence that I hope that you have. You have to write this goal down, though. That's really the class last night in a nutshell. If you attended last night, we really appreciate you coming out. And for everybody else, that's what it was all about in a nutshell. The 8 parts of life that Steve identified. But first and foremost, finance. What is your specific financial goal for your life? And this is a goal that you can make extremely large, because the bigger this goal is, the better you're going to feel about pursuing it. Is your goal to make $1 million a year? Is your goal to make $500,000 a year in passive, semi-passive income through real estate? You know, think about what is it you really want to spend your time doing, and find out how much it costs, and then put that towards this financial goal, and that's going to allow you to pursue it with passion. So please write your goals down, write them down today, and start pursuing them today. Thank you all so much for listening today. This is Trevor Davis with Total Wealth Academy. If y'all have any questions, please email me at trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. If you want the book, put that subject line radio, trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. And thank y'all so much. Happy Wednesday.
You've been listening to the Total Wealth Academy Radio Show. Please remember that this show is for entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investing advice. Always get a professional opinion before making any investment decisions. To find out more about coaching and consulting at Total Wealth Academy, visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and attend one of our free sample classes on real estate investing. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.